Grandma's Secret by Brianda Cross. When Yaya got sick in the last stages of the COVID pandemic, I was the natural one to care for her. Apart from the fact that I had recently obtained my nursing degree, my brothers and sisters already had full-time jobs with the taverna, let alone large families to consider. And Mama, well, let's say that although she had birthed four children, she just wasn't the motherly type. It had been our grandmother who had fulfilled that role, and we had always known Baba's adoration of Mama meant that his only function in life was to pamper her by providing her with her substantial material needs. Apparently, the stress of having limited entertainment through the COVID years had left Mama under severe stress, and as soon as the cruise ships began cruising, our parents had said their farewells, promised to bring back lots of photographs, and booked for an extended trip to Europe. Having said that, it did come as a surprise when Yaya called, for she had never once been to hospital or found need to visit a doctor. When odd little ailments afflicted her, she would refer to her good medicine companion and quickly find a home remedy that brought her back to her usual vital, sweet self. But a sudden and intense bout of influenza had proved too much for her, and just 3 days ago, she had succumbed to asking me to come over and help with a few things, which I had been glad to do. 72 hours later, she was gone. I felt a piece of history had gone with her. Yaya was a penniless war widow when she had emigrated to Australia with her 8-year-old daughter, Helena. And although she had suffered racism and hardship, she managed to survive, send Mama to the best private schools, and, in a small way, prosper. She was content to bring up her only child as a single mother, simply but honestly, with masses of sacrifice and very little regret. There was speculation of her long-term widowed status, of course, but she was rarely confronted directly with the gossip. So rare to find such a love match.
Oh, how wonderful to be so blessed to find your one true love and remain so faithful.
So many young women gave their all to those going off to war without benefit of a wedding ceremony. As I got older, I was not entirely immune to the gossip myself, and often wondered about that shadowy figure of grandfather, whoever he was, who had flitted into Grandma's life so briefly, only to disappear again so completely. Not that he was ever missed as a breadwinner, for Grandma had been fiercely independent, using her skills as a dressmaker to provide a comfortable living. I had never really been aware of these skills until my weekend with her before she died. She had asked her assistants to choose a clean dress to wear, and I had helped her to her closet. She had selected a simple white crepe dress with a swathe of minute pleats, which hung in folds on her now skeletal frame. I could not help but notice the superb craftsmanship in the shaping. She had obviously capitalized on her height and chosen swathes and drapes that enhanced her slender frame to advantage. Her sudden dependence was obviously of great concern to her independent nature. She had insisted on giving herself a sponge bath in the privacy of her room before allowing me to style her hair. Using an old-fashioned tortoiseshell hairbrush, I gently swept the grey locks above her exquisite porcelain face. Neither of us knew this would be the last time I would complete this little gesture. The intimacy of the moment was broken when she spoke in a low but surprisingly resolute voice.
Calista, I want to thank you for your help these last few days.
I murmured the usual platitudes of good thoughts, but she interrupted me urgently.
Hush, my dear. We both know there is little time left, and I need to ask a favor of you, an enormous favor.
I waited patiently for her to go on.
We both know your mother is a foolish woman, pampered and spoiled by me, no doubt. Maybe loved too much. But I had to give all my love to her, you see, being the only child. But now, I must ask you, as her daughter, to try and protect her whenever, if ever, it is necessary.
Surprised at this line of discussion, I assured her that my father would always do that, but Grandma persisted.
No, 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 my dear. There may be need, after my death, to give her a special kind of protection. I'll help her be strong against gossip and bad jokes.
I thought I knew where this was leading and tried to interrupt gently. Oh, Yaya, you are referring to the fact that you and Pupu were never married. Don't worry, that is no longer an issue in today's society. She looked at me strangely, and a light smile hovered on her lips.
Is that what you thought? No, my dear, that is not my concern.
She patted my hand.
Calista, I am not unaware that I have often been considered independent. Too independent to even contemplate marriage, perhaps. But there is a good reason.
She gave one of her whimsical smiles.
A very good reason. In the early years, trying to raise your mother on my own was difficult. And believe me, I would have loved to have had someone else beside me, shouldering the responsibility, giving me companionship, loving me.
I saw a tear form into her eye, and now it was my turn to pat her hand. She acknowledged my gesture with a little squeeze, then surprised me by changing her tone and conversation.
I've never spoken about my own life, my own childhood. Why would I? Life was grim and not worthy of revisiting, even through memories.
She looked towards the window as if escaping her room into the world beyond. Her voice became distant and almost impersonal as she recounted a world almost a century past.
Perhaps you know, I was born in Calavrian, a small village in the outskirts of Athens. My parents died in one of the early Greek conflicts, so I grew up in an orphanage. There were little more than workhouses back in the 1930s and 40s. So, you see, I never had a traditional family life to know or miss.
I was suddenly overcome with sadness for this old lady's loneliness. She had lived her entire life without benefit of a mother or father, or later, a husband. But she was continuing.
I was a strange child, lonely and withdrawn. Probably not very lovable.
I began to protest, but again she continued.
Anyway, I left the orphanage at an early age and was put into bonded service on a farm. Oh, it was hard work, but all very normal in those times. And to be honest, Greece had endured tough times even before the war. Famine and the bad government had taken its toll. Food had become scarce. So a farm in a small village was as good a place to be in as any.
She hesitated a moment, and needing to fuss over her, I gently laid her back onto the pillows and poured her a drink of water. She took it, nodding her head in thanks. Then, after a sip, went on with her nostalgia.
I cannot say I was happy. Far from it. But then, there were plenty of others in a similar state, lonely, with no one to care for them or love or be loved in return.
I had never heard Yaya show so much misery. Her eyes had misted over, and it was as if she had given up the present entirely for the past.
The war finally came to our land one day, when word swept through the village that the Germans were on their way, and they were razing all villages, such as ours, to the ground. In addition to torching all the houses, they were going out of their way to exterminate all males, including children. I was coming home late one night after a visit to a nearby village when I saw my farmhouse on fire. In the distance, I could see the red glow of others, and the noise of gunfire left little doubt that the Germans had arrived. I didn't know what to do, or even where to go. I could see bodies of men lying about on the road, most people I knew. In the dark, I could see a woman coming towards me along the road. She was struggling with two small girls and one no more than a baby. I ran towards her and just managed to gather the baby in my arms before she fell. She could barely breathe. Her eyes were wild with fright as she muttered just one phrase, "Save my children." I had no more time than to nod my head, and then the woman died before me. Her face and body had been totally mangled by burns and falling debris. The little girl was quiet with terror, though by now the baby was screaming. I picked up the woman's bag and sorted through her identity papers. They told me that she was an Aniqua Balabian. They told me she was Anika Balabran, and her children were Joris, age 2, and baby Helena. Joris? I looked at the little girl more closely. I could not be sure and in no position to check, but I felt that I was looking at a little boy, dressed in girl's clothes. I picked up the case and baby Helena and transferred Joris's little hand to hold my coat. Then, in soothing voice, ushered him to follow me.
Grandma's voice suddenly became steely, almost defensive.
I was petrified for myself, there is no doubt. But once I had those small children in my care and the unspoken bond I had delivered of their mother, I found an inner strength. My first inclination was to make my way to a monastery nearby. I had little doubt they would take us in, but so far the Germans had given no hesitation in slaughtering boys, let alone monks, and I was naturally fearful if they knew of the monastery and that they would make for it.
My grandmother's voice was now low, but steady. It was as if the years had rolled back, and she was reliving those terrible times all over again.
Although the German troops were being thorough in their slaughter of the towns and villages, they had been following a route towards the sea. I took a chance and made my way back toward Kameno. I took a chance and made my way back to Kameno, which had been the first... Oh, damn. Sorry. I took a chance and made my way back toward Kameno, which had been the first village they had attacked and razed. My rationale was that having been so thorough, they would have no reason to retrace their steps. There was just one chance, a slim one, that they had not deviated from their march northwards and may have missed a small convent that lay between Cumino and Calavrian. It was not visible from the road and only accessed by a track that went deep into the forest. Slowly we walked through the night, taking stops whenever Yoris faltered. The baby cried from time to time, but little Yoris was chillingly quiet. Although it was a difficult trek, I knew it well, and by dawn I could see the outline of a church steeple rising above the treetops. Although the covenant was close by, it was not visible from the road. Access was by a track that seemed to go deep into the forest. Would it still be occupied? And if so, by whom? My entire body was electric with fright, and as I approached, my entire body was electric with fright as I approached. But I felt instantly encouraged to note that there was no smell or sign of burning. The Germans had missed this part of town. It was safe. I was safe.
The old lady sighed and took a deep breath, as if reliving this moment of respite. But a moment later she continued, while I held my own breath, totally immersed in her story.
We got there with the dawn light, and without question, the nuns took us in, fed us a meager supper, and allowed us a Spartan bed. There was little we could do than wait and hope that the Nazi soldiers had passed us by. They had.
Oh, Yaya, what a terrible ordeal, and how brave you were, I blurted out, putting my arms around her frail shoulders. But she shook me off angrily, I thought.
No, there is more.
Her voice was steely now that the riggers were behind her.
The sisters took me in without question. Word had it that, like their own, my village had been torched to the ground. In each instance, the story was the same. The Nazis had massacred all the males, so all the stray survivors were women. Fortunately for me, none were from my village or those nearby.
The old lady stopped a moment, as if waiting for me to interrupt. But I had nothing to say, until her words gradually soaked in, and I looked at her with puzzlement. Why didn't you want neighbors? Surely that would have been of comfort.
Because when I had taken up Annika's belongings and spare clothing, I had put them on for extra warmth and ease of travel. I also had her identity documents, and her children were now in my care, one of which was a boy.
I began to feel a knot of excitement uncoil. Yaya's secret was finally being unravelled, both as predicted by the gossip mongers, and yet entirely different. So you took them? You took them to be your own? I took this information in with a little more thought, and what it meant to my mother and to me. Yaya, does mother know? My Nana shook her head, and when she answered, her words gave me another jolt of surprise.
I had assumed a new identity for myself, and such an admission would have had repercussions for me and my opportunity to look after her.
Of course. You took on the identity of the dead woman in order to keep the children. My brain was finally filtering this new information.
Yes, otherwise they would have been put into an orphanage, and I knew only too well what they were like. And in war, they were going to be far worse, especially for the little boy.
I nodded. It made good sense. Somehow so many questions had just been answered, and yet so many remained. So what happened to him? I've never heard you speak of a Yoris. She shook her head.
No, he died shortly after we arrived. Oh, there is little doubt that he was in shock. But when the nuns and I had undressed him that night, we found he had also been burned. Oh, not too badly, but enough for an infection to set in.
I remember Nana falling back on the pillow then. In fact, I thought she had died. But as I bent closer, I could detect shallow breathing and a faraway look in her eyes. Yaya, rest a while. Let me make you some tea. She suddenly grasped my hand, surprisingly firmly.
No, I must go on. There isn't much time, and someone needs to know.
Darling, I understand your story. You took the little girl and pretended it was your own. What a wonderful gesture. And like you say, at a time when single women with children were not supported, as they are today. Surely mother needs never know. I certainly won't tell her, not if you don't want me to tell her. Again she pulled at my arm, bringing me closer to her face. She almost whispered the next words.
No, there's more. There's much more.
It was as if with superhuman strength, she levered herself up on the pillows, resolute to unburden herself. A deep shudder racked her body, and her voice was low and husky.
It was not kindness to take on the children, Calista. It was an act of cowardice.
Now I was totally bewildered. Every instinct in my body told me to calm her, encourage her to lay back and rest. I could see her face ravaged by her disclosures, and her body was taut with some kind of rigid fear. Fear of what? She was an old, old lady who had, on one hand, seemed ready to give up the fight for life, and on the other, petrified of what? The story was not, in fact, so very different from many others that had circulated over the years, of the hardship and deprivation suffered by so many through those grueling times. The only difference in her case was that after the war, rather than go to what shreds of government authorities that may have existed, she had favoured staying silent. This made good sense, as the convents respected privacy so much more and offered bed and board in exchange for laboured work for the sick and dying. She confirmed this to be true, saying she had stayed working the vegetable garden until the Australian immigration schemes began in 1949.
I was one of the first to apply, and the rest you know.
But the story was not finished. After a brief lapse, she grasped my hand and motioned me close.
I must explain why I spoke of cowardice. You see, my dear, when I took the children and their mother's identity, I killed myself. I burned my own papers as soon as I could, along with most of my personal things. I died, you see. I had to. The extermination of the males.
Her voice trailed off to nothing. I was confused and found myself stammering. What are you saying, Yaya? What are you saying? Suddenly, the old lady changed the subject, her voice taking on an almost roguish note.
Callie, I've always been blessed with good health. It's a shame we don't share the same bloodline. That would be such a fine inheritance to pass on to you.
But now she dropped the light-hearted air and went on seriously.
Yes, I was fortunate with my health, for if I had been less favored, I could not have continued.
Another deep sigh came from her as she looked down at her wrinkled hands nervously.
My dear, no one knows, and I would love to go to my grave without burdening you with this, but I must trust you to deal with it how best you may. I merely ask that you observe as much discretion as you can, and allow me dignity at the end. I had reason to want to hide my identity on that fateful day, my dear, because although it was time of horror for everyone, young males were being exterminated without exception. They would torch the village, too, and the women would suffer extraordinary hardship, but at least they would have a glimmer of hope.
There had been a long silence before the quiet words that had been suppressed for so long finally surfaced.
In some ways, it was inevitable, almost my destiny. For all those years growing up in the orphanage, I had known that I was different from all the other boys.
It was said so quietly, I had almost missed it again.
Yes, I was different from the other boys in school and the orphanage.
Without waiting for me to say anything, the old woman went on.
Most boys of my age had already enlisted or become a partisan in the resistance. Oh, I was terrified of facing that. But even more so, I was petrified of having to mix with men, being ridiculed for being different. I was terrified of being raped, as I had in the boys' home, let alone expected to kill someone or be killed.
I felt a cold excitement course through me as my memory rolled through my years, months, weeks, and days with my beloved grandmother. So much fell into place. At the same time, the shock was so great I had an almost compulsive reaction to near hysteria and an almost uncontrollable urge to laugh. The absurdity, it was a music hall joke. It was as if Yaya had penetrated my thoughts.
People will think my life a joke, Callie, but I don't regret a moment. Compared with how my life might have been, it has been wonderful. I have had the opportunity to do things that come natural to me, to cook and sew, activities that would have been denied me as a man. I've been blessed with a daughter who I truly believe has fared better than she would have as an orphan, a life I knew only too well. And when she married, I welcomed your father, a wonderful man, as family, and all your brothers and sisters and their children. Oh, my life here has been a joy. I feel most blessed, my dear.
I wanted to hug her, tell her I understood, tell her her secret was safe. Tell her, well, anything that would ease her pain of such a secret. But it had been too late. Even as I bent to embrace her, I realized she was gone. He was gone. I sat for a long time, first in shock, then in grief, planning what to do and how to do it. Finally, a few hours later, as the dawn light broke into day, I contacted the family doctor, who was also a family friend. We discussed in detail the dilemma of burial, but he was an old man himself, and finally said the words I wanted to hear. As she lived, so she died. We'll bury the woman we know. I laid her out myself and watched over her as the undertakers placed her in the coffin. At all times, Nana received the dignity she had requested. By the time the family were gathered in the funeral home, we mourned our much-loved grandmother, who had lived a good life, but given even more goodness to all around her. Yet it was only after the cremation that I had finally allowed myself to relax and allowed myself to grieve for the grandmother I had loved but never really known. You have been listening to Grandma's Secret. You have been listening to Grandma's Secret, written and produced by Brianda Cross, narrated by Brianda Cross, and Kathleen Montelleron was Yaya. Thank you for listening, and please tune in again to fastfictionpodcast.com for similar but different audio stories. Thank you.